Welcome to Corrientals. This is Wendy.
And this is Kate.
Today's cast, measuring and communicating your true professional value.
The questions this cast answers are, what should I actually be measuring in my role? How do I track these metrics effectively? And how can I use this data to improve my performance and advance my career?
If you want the answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
Ever wish you could ask Manager Tools a question and get an instant answer? Now you can. Our custom-built chatbot is trained on years of Manager Tools guidance. Ask it how to run a one-on-one, what to say in a feedback conversation, or how to handle a tricky direct, and it gives you the right answer right away. It's like having Mark and Mike in your pocket. Go to chat.manager-tools.com to try the chatbot for free and sign up.
Organizations hopefully make decisions based on rational things like data. So when they make changes, they have the data to support the change they're making, and they can see whether or not it has an effect, the effect they want, and then they make another change. That's the way that organizations as a whole work. But when people are individual contributors, especially when they're new to the workforce, it's really hard to identify those things that you do that make a difference, that move the needle, and then work out how to improve those specific things. Like, the organization has, like, let's say 100 smart people in it who know about the market and what they're trying to achieve and what measures are important, and then how other companies have moved those metrics and have ideas and so on. But for an individual contributor, that can be really hard. And the thing that is important about that is being able to demonstrate that on your resume, that skill, because it's so rare, is a real career gold moment. That if you can do it, because you're so unusual, you're head and shoulders above everybody else. And what most people end up resorting to is productivity metrics. So they measure how many tasks they've done or how many deadlines they've met, or how many hours they've worked, but they don't connect that to the impact to the organization. And that is why a lot of people end up on their resume of having a list of activity and no results. And it's the results that matter. It's that big picture accomplishment of how your work moved the needle for the organization that demonstrates your value. And that's what you put on your resume, because that's what gets you the interview. Because if you can do that for this team, then the hiring manager hopes you can do it for theirs. So being able to understand both your immediate productivity metrics, like what you did today and this week, and your broader contribution to the organizational goals is a really, really important career skill, and it's one that people learn way too late. So in this cast, we're going to try and help you understand the difference between the two, how to find those things that move the needle, and how you can start doing that right now, whether you're in day one of your career or 20 years into your career and you haven't learned it yet. We're about to show you how.
We're going to cover four things: identify your outputs, decide on metrics, track metrics and make improvements, and review, adapt, and repeat. So we start with identify your outputs.
Right.
Yeah. Before you can measure your performance effectively, you have to understand what your true outputs are. Without this step, you'll do what so many people do and focus on tasks you complete each day. And okay, that is useful. It just doesn't really allow you to demonstrate your value to the organization, to yourself, to your boss during performance reviews or on your resume. So we're going to go a level deeper than that. As Wendy said, it's like puts you head and shoulders above. And we know that this is happening out there because we see so many resumes that list what people did rather than what they accomplished or how their work benefited the organization. And for clarity, it's not that these professionals aren't making contributions. They simply haven't done the thinking to describe their work in terms of meaningful outputs. And okay, like that's a next level thing. It's like next order thinking. And if you can do it at the beginning and start your career with a clear understanding of your outputs, how to measure them, and how to improve, then you have a step up over those people who, the majority of people, frankly, and all those people out there who are just completing tasks and focusing on that. Also, even if you're not early on, you can still use this because no matter where you're at, this is something that you might not be doing and you can start now.
And this might take a couple of weeks or even months to work out. So don't worry about if you're listening to this and you're thinking, I don't know what my outputs are, or this doesn't relate to what I'm doing and I'm checking off lines of code. We're going to go through a few examples, but it might take you a little while to work out how to do this, and that's fine. It's second order thinking for a reason. You have to get past the first order, and most people don't. So,
yeah. So, for example, a software developer might count writing 100 lines of code today as an output. Truly, though, this actually describes an activity. Those 100 lines might deliver substantial value to the organization, contribute nothing of immediate value, or simply lay the groundwork for future work. The true output relates to what those lines of code accomplish. You wrote 100. Some of the 100 you write are really, really valuable. Some of them are foundational. Some of them are less valuable. Learning to shift your thinking from activity to outcome is a distinct and really valuable professional skill. And again, like to your point, Wendy, it's okay if it takes a while, y'all, to translate these things.
Yeah. So those 100 lines of code don't have equal value. So we don't expect you to get this perfectly in the beginning. And we know like a lot of professionals who don't get it after 20 years. So just don't worry too much. Just at the end of the day, write down everything you did and begin to practice thinking of these things in terms of what they mean to the organization. So I wrote 100 lines of code on Monday. And what they meant was we got 1/5 through the deliverable for a customer. I wrote 100 lines on Tuesday, and what they meant was it provided tracking for the organization for a particular metric. I wrote 100 lines on Wednesday, and on Friday, I discovered they were a complete waste of time and they were overwritten, so they had no value whatsoever.
Yeah.
Right? And that unfortunately is organizational life. Sometimes you do a bunch of work and it means nothing. So those 3 days, you had the same activity. You could count those 3 days as equally valuable, but they're not. They have different values to the organization.
It sometimes helps to think of why you're doing a thing. Mm-hmm. Another example might be if you answered 15 customer service emails, what you were doing for the organization is communicating with customers. Maybe it was resolving issues, maybe making sales, maybe you're retaining people, maybe you're identifying issues that need to be fixed in the future. The activity is answering 15 emails. The output is supporting customers who interact with the organization. Those are two different things. One is a checkbox and the other is a value proposition, essentially.
Right. If those 15 emails on Monday all resulted in $1 million sales, they have that value. If the 15 emails you wrote on Tuesday, you answered on Tuesday, were all, I'm sorry, we made a mistake. Here's the actual information. There's a completely different value. Those emails, those, I'm sorry, I had to make a mistake value, please don't believe that nobody ever makes a mistake, because those were the emails I wrote this week and they have to be written, but they don't have the same value to the organization as the $15 million sales, even though it's the same activity.
Yeah. There's more examples we could bring up, right? Like, okay, a marketing specialist maybe tracks that they created 3 social media posts as an activity. And the actual outputs could be increased brand awareness, higher engagement rates, or new qualified leads generated. The value isn't in creating the posts, but what those posts accomplish for the business.
Exactly. So if you're in HR, an HR recruiter, which is what I used to do, might count conducted 8 interviews this week. Or if they're good, can they did 8 interviews today? That's a day. But the output are, I moved quality candidates through the process, right? We got 3 quality candidates for this position from first interview to second interview. We filled some positions. We reduced the time to hire metric because I did 8 interviews in a day.
Yeah. Like,
it's not just sitting in the interviews and carrying out those interviews that matters. It's how that makes value for the organization.
Yeah. Another difference there would be if you hired an individual contributor versus a CEO, right?
Yeah.
So Same maybe it's only one interview, but totally different value. Okay, so let's think about data analyst. They might report built 5 dashboards this month as their work product. But the real output are the business decisions improved by the visualizations, inefficiencies identified, or opportunities uncovered with the data insights. The dashboards themselves are tools, not outcomes. Also, I just saw, just as a side note here, I just saw a really powerful commercial. I almost said the best, but a really powerful commercial this week of a guy from BDO who is one of their data visualization engineers, and he is legally blind. And the commercial is him saying, if I can look at it and see what it means, it's the right dashboard.
Nice.
How good is that? I thought to myself, my gosh, what a perfect commercial.
Well done, whoever did their marketing doesn't need to check off, I wrote an ad. What they need to check off is, I increased brand awareness because Manager Tools mentioned my ad in a podcast.
Right? Also, just the idea of like simplicity of dashboards and obviously them to hiring people with diversity in mind, right? Or hiring a person who's good at their job when maybe your thought might not be that a person who's blind would be a visualization artist. But it turns out, hey, that's the right answer. Okay, so that was a complete aside. My apologies.
Before we go on, I just want to bring this up because this is one of the places where this kind of role demonstrates an issue that I see a lot on resumes. So the data analyst is like, I created dashboards, and they think that that's their output, but it's not, because the output is the decisions the business made on it, made based on those. And it's hard for someone who creates those dashboards to then claim on their resume increased revenue by 5 million by creating a dashboard for the business. It's not true that 100% without the dashboard, it never would have happened. But we can say that that dashboard that you created is a significant driver of that revenue. And so you are allowed to claim that on your resume.
A lot of the people I talk to about their resumes, and to be fair, most of the people I talk to are college age engineering students. And they are kind of like, they have this fear of inflating things. They have this concern of, I don't want to claim something I didn't do and all this. And it's a great thought process to say like, oh, there's a lot of humility involved in that thought process. There's a lot of honesty involved in that thought process. And let's not let those things limit us from describing our work as it benefits the company, because it does. And when you do these things, all these little things add up. You know, even if you say built dashboard X, contributing to savings of, right? And so you're not claiming the whole thing. Just, I see this all the time. You're right. Like, people are loath to put these things on their resume as overly positive. Like, what they're willing to track is activity, almost because they don't want to like toot their own horn.
Right. Exactly.
And again, honesty, humility, all great things. However, what it does is limit your ability to translate that stuff into business outcomes. And you gotta do it, because A, if you don't, the person who wasn't there won't understand the implications. B, even if they could guess at it, what it says to somebody reading your resume is that you're not thinking about the business.
Exactly.
And then you look like a person who doesn't understand and doesn't engage in what the business needs. And that's a less like enticing hire position.
Yeah. And a hiring manager who is hiring someone to create dashboards understands that that person actually didn't go increase the revenue. You know, they didn't go do whatever it was that increased the revenue, but they enabled that through the dashboard creation. So you don't need to worry about people overreading what's in there, because the people who are hiring you understand your job.
Hopefully. And if you're worried, if you're switching industries, if you're moving, and again, I work with a lot of college age engineers on their resumes. In that case, a lot of times, what you can focus on is time and cost savings. So if you think, oh my gosh, no one's going to understand this. And to be fair, some of the stuff I see on resumes is completely obscure to other people because it's engineering stuff that makes no sense unless you were there. However, what everyone does understand is time and money. So that is one other, that's an area where if what you did saved us some time and money, and then it needs to be presented on your resume in that way. Because to a certain extent, nobody cares what kind of engineering degree you got. What they want to know is, can you use it at work?
And can you use it to move the needle for the organization, which is the whole point of what we're talking about. But let's go back to our examples after a quick tangent. A project manager could list facilitated 3 team meetings as an activity, but the actual outputs include things like removing blockers for team members so that other work gets done, improving cross-functional coordination, or keeping deliverables on schedule. The meetings are a means to an end, and it's the end that we care about.
A sales representative could track made 50 calls today as their activity. The true outputs, though, are new relationships established, prospects move forward in the sales pipeline, or revenue generated. And it's not the calls themselves that are the output. Simply, the calls are the vehicle for creating value.
Yeah. If you start by writing down what you did and then listen to go back and listen to these examples, or if you are a licensee, you can go read the show notes and read the examples and help yourself to start thinking, okay, why was I doing this? What was the reason the company paid me to do this today?
Okay, Northeast, you're up. August 5th and 6th, we're hosting an EMC and ECC in Jersey City, Effective Management and Communications. If you're in the area, or maybe even the Big Apple, it's an opportunity to learn the next steps to becoming a more effective professional. Better management, better communication, and you can always meet other professionals in the area. We'd love to see you there. August 5th and 6th, sign up at manager-tools.com/training.
Once we have an idea of why we're doing this, the next thing is to start tracking the metrics. And the way to decide what metrics to track is to ask yourself, what's the definition of success in this activity? And one way you can think about this is if you think about the behaviors. So Manager Tools recommends when we're talking to managers about their directs and what they're doing, we talk about behaviors, and we have a list of behaviors that create a rubric. And they are quality, quantity, accuracy, timeliness, documentation, and safety. So the definition of success could be a quality measure, it could be a quantity measure, and so on. So if we go back to those dashboards, for instance, it could be that we increase the quality of decision making. And we know that because 9 out of 10 decisions turned out to be right after we created our dashboard. It could be timeliness, that we created a dashboard and now people have the right information at the right time to make decisions. So you can use that as a rubric. It's, again, it's not a comprehensive list, but you can go through it, you know, like, why was I doing this activity? Is it to increase quality? Is it to increase quantity? And so on.
Mm-hmm. To be clear, many activities have multiple outputs or results that matter to the organization. Using one of the examples we're talking about, the HR manager may be tracking interviews they conducted, and the results for the organization could be described as moved X number of candidates forward in the pipeline, filed Y number of positions, reduced time to hire metrics, and all three of these could be valid. They might all be valid, might be one of them. Which is most important depends on somewhat of the current requirements of the organization. An organization with high time to hire metrics might want to reduce the time it takes to hire rather than fulfilling specific positions. As a recruiter, that would mean focusing on the throughput more than, for example, spending time at the front end looking for candidates with very specific skills. It means spending any discretionary time on chasing hiring managers to make decisions rather than, for example, on LinkedIn. So you're making choices about what the organization needs, and sometimes that changes. Sometimes it's different for each organization. If you're a hiring person, you might be hiring for a lot of companies. Maybe some places they need this and some places they need that. And then when it comes to your resume, which of these you choose to highlight will rely on the job description and the needs of the organization that's hiring you. Maybe they're looking for something specific. You're being brought in with a certain mandate. However, most often as you're doing this, because you might not be doing this while looking for a job, you might be measuring basic outputs, then you should be able to express your results in multiple ways. So as long as your tracking spreadsheet had position, status, date started, date of last status change, and date process ended, then you'll be able to pull out the number of candidates move forward in the pipeline, the positions filled, and the time to hire. The problem is that most people don't keep their own metrics like this. There's a whole group of people that do, and they're loving this cast. But most people rely on the organization's tracking and then can't access the metrics at all when they need them or don't have the metrics they want.
So that's why we're doing it ourselves.
Right. That's why we're highlighting this for you so that you can make good choices.
Yeah, exactly. So for some real roles, the metrics are universal. So for example, in project management, the measure of a project is always delivered on time, on budget, on scope. So a successful project manager always is tracking the metrics to know whether they're delivering their projects on time, on budget, on scope. But that isn't the only way a project is relevant to an organization. Like, you might deliver the project, but what does the project do for the organization? Like, if you delivered a project on time that was a new product for the company to sell, then the output is the number of sales and the revenue that the company made. That's more important than whether or not you delivered the project on time, right? Mm-hmm. Any project manager should be able to deliver projects on time, on budget, on scope. Not every project manager can claim that they made $5 million in sales by delivering the product development project on time, on budget, on sales.
Yeah, this is what we mean sometimes when we say, when we're doing resume stuff, that when we say, oh, the job description is what everybody in the role would have done. The accomplishments are what you did. That's what we say, but this is what we mean.
Yes. Any project manager can claim to deliver projects on time, on budget, on scope. What you can claim is the effect that the project you delivered had on the organization.
Yes. Honestly, you can't always directly affect the revenue in your day-to-day work. And it's worth thinking about the fact that while revenue impact might be what ends up on your resume, your daily focus is on delivering projects successfully, on scope, within budget, and on time. The more effectively that you can do that, the better you're performing in your role. It doesn't matter if you get these metrics perfectly right at first. What we're doing here is practicing understanding what truly matters to the organization, thinking through that.
Yeah, we don't want you to lose sight of actually doing your job on a day-to-day basis because you're right, focused on the outcomes to the organization. We want you to understand the outcomes of the organization because, A, that helps you with your resume and explaining your role and your value to the organization. It helps you decide what your day-to-day things should be, but probably not immediately, probably not if you're early in your career, you don't make those kind of choices. So it's a sort of a two-track thinking. There's the day-to-day, hour-by-hour stuff that you're doing, which is basically tasks, and this higher-level thinking that you're not necessarily doing on a day-to-day basis. And we'll talk about that in a minute, but like, we don't want you to get confused between the two.
Right. Because we do recommend that you track metrics. The tracking part is easy, recording your metrics consistently. Making time to track and record your metrics regularly. Y'all, the longer you leave it between recording sessions, the harder it is to find the metrics and have accurate data. Daily or weekly is probably the right level for both the kind of metrics you're measuring and the frequency you need to not make this into a chore. Just looking at the data as you record it can make a difference in your performance. There's a well-known principle that what gets measured gets done. And even in physics, the act of observation can change behavior. It's known as the observer effect. I will tell you, as a person who lives with an infant is the best example I have ever experienced in my life of the observer effect.
Like just watching him changes his behavior?
Of course it does, 100%. Well, and we're getting to that point now. Like he'll go to make like a frowny face. And if you say, oh, that's not what we're doing, we're okay, then he'll change his face. But also, I swear to you, the minute you get close to the bassinet where they're supposed to be asleep, then you've woken them. And it's like, oh my gosh. So if you have a baby, you know what I'm talking about. I swear sometimes all I have to do is think about if he's asleep in the bassinet and he's awake. Like I can be in my own bed thinking, are we sure he's going to sleep for the rest of the night? And I swear it wakes him up.
That's amazing. Transcendental thinking.
Right?
Yeah. So just tracking your measures sometimes makes you improve them just because you're writing them down. I saw something. If you write down your weight every day, you will lose weight by not doing anything else. There's just like that psychology of it's in the back of your head when you go to the fridge and you choose make better choices. That's in organizations, it might make a small change to what you do day to day. It's probably not enough to really like make some major improvement.
Yeah, there's too many people involved, right? Like there's like the static
friction.
Yeah, static friction is one way to do it, but like there's the entropy of the organization, like kind of holding you in that position.
So we can hope that just writing things down gives you a little bit of improvement because it sometimes does. But usually in order to make significant change, you will have to do more than that. But no matter what you want to do, the start of it is measuring consistently.
Yeah, absolutely. It is totally true that simply measuring begins the process. It's if you just start looking, you begin to see just more and you're paying attention. And again, the observer effect is in there. Once you have some data, it's time to put aside time to review your data set more holistically, to take a step back from it, ask what does the data set mean? What is like all of this? What's the effect here? How can I change it? If you're recording your data daily or weekly, then monthly or quarterly is probably right for the stand back review. You're looking when you do this review for opportunities to improve the output metrics, those that have an effect on the organization. For example, you might be tracking the lines of code you've written, and this is your opportunity to ask, did those lines of code create a function, fix a problem, finish a project, etc.? Maybe you work on a project where a customer pays for each function the product can deliver for them. If you wrote 6,000 lines of code in 3 months and that equated to 5 functions, then your result was 1,200 lines of code per function. And in order to increase your contribution to the company in the next quarter, you need to find a way to increase the efficiency of your code so that 1,000 lines of code equals a function, meaning you would have completed 6 functions, or conversely, you could increase your speed of writing to 7,200 lines of code in 3 months, which would also mean you'd complete 6 functions. So we're increasing our impact to the organization, but we have to know the relationship between our activity and the impact in order to do that.
And then you can make choices about how you're going to do that.
Yeah. And maybe so that like in that case, you'd have 2 choices, right? You have writing better code or writing faster code.
And there's probably a bunch of other choices too, but yes. I didn't write code and they were my 2 best choices.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I found out, just so you know, remember how we used to talk about Ruby on Rails because it was cool? Mm-hmm. And now we switched to Python, but we did that a while ago. So I assumed that Python wasn't cool anymore, but I got told this week by some software people, shout out to my public conference teams, that Python is cool again.
Okay.
Something to do with Python and AI. I'm sure people listening are absolutely just appalled by all of the sentences I just uttered. But I was told this week that Python is cool again.
I can do a little bit of Python and pandas, so I'm cool.
We have to also say this, y'all. This week in my public conference event, we had someone from the Nashville Zoo, and the Nashville Zoo has a kangaroo enclosure that you can go to and hang out in. So we just want to tell everyone to go to the Nashville Zoo and see the kangaroo. A kangaroo came to my training. Her name was Peppa Rooney. You can go to Nashville Zoo and meet her.
Best name ever. And she has an excellent manager because they went through your management training.
Yes, Stephen. Yes, we had a great group this week. It was really great. It was really, really fun to work with them. And they also helped me understand that Python is cool again.
Okay, awesome. I'm feeling cool. Okay, so when you're looking at this data, some things to watch out for. Be mindful of the difference between optimization and suboptimization, or not the difference, but the relationship between the two. Sometimes it's better to perform one activity less efficiently if it improves the overall process and results. So, for example, spending more time on fewer high-quality social media posts might generate better engagement than, like, you could produce 100 social media posts and post them all, or you can post 20 really good ones and get better engagement. So volume isn't always the measure. So just be careful of that. And if you don't know about optimization and sub-optimization, the way they work in processes, there's a book, Eli Goldratt's book, The Goal, is the best explanation of that that we know. And it's a fable. So it's really easy to read and understand. And even if you do know what the difference between sub-optimization and sub-optimization of processes are, read it anyway, because it's really good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. When analyzing your results, be careful about distinguishing between correlation and causation. Ooh, this is a tricky one. Just because two metrics change simultaneously doesn't necessarily mean one caused the other. A sudden increase in brand awareness might coincide with your new posting strategy, but it might also be because Manager Tools mentioned that you have a kangaroo kickabout at your Nashville Zoo.
Yeah.
Could be one or the other. And we have a podcast that explains this more fully. The podcast is Data Analysis for Beginners, Avoiding Common Mistakes.
And my favorite example of mixing up correlation and causation is it's famous, but it's still my favorite. Increases in sales of margarine in Maine cause divorce. It's a thing. Look it up. It's fun.
I love stuff like that. And I haven't seen this one. So I'm really excited because I have no idea what you're talking about. I mean, I understood the sentence. I don't know what to do with that.
There's a graph that shows increases in sales in margarine over the last 40 years and the divorce rate in Maine. And the two numbers track each other perfectly. And the answer is, we started having margarine in the end of the 60s, the 70s. People started buying it instead of butter. And at the same time, societally, we were more okay with divorce. And so more people got divorced. And so the two numbers look like they track perfectly, which they do. And you can read that as more sales of margarine cause divorce.
Oh, my gosh. I love it. Yes, I'm getting divorced from you because you don't put butter on the table. Exactly. This is a vegetable byproduct. Oh my gosh, yesterday I had a conversation about, is Crisco made of vegetables? It was really fun. Okay. Once you've completed your review, you'll decide on one or two changes and then start your measuring process again. Y'all, don't make a bunch of changes at once. You won't know which ones are actually causing the change in your metrics if you change a bunch of stuff all at once. It is tempting to take the kind of New Year's resolution approach and change everything. Don't do it. It's better for your understanding of your metrics to make slow and steady changes.
Remember, most people aren't doing this. So you're not behind. It can take as long as you like.
Yeah.
And the last thing to watch out for, metrics doesn't always mean activity or tasks. It can mean people too. Sometimes the thing you need to change to make a difference in your results is your relationships. The number of times you talk to people, what you communicate with them, when you communicate it with them, who you have a relationship with in the organization. Go to the website and search Measure Relationships. We have podcasts about how to do that.
In your next review, you might find that a huge effort brings very low or even no results. We recently decided to eliminate something that we have been working on for a long time because, hey, guess what? We thought people would love it and they didn't. So, okay, we did a huge effort, low results. For you at your desk as an individual contributor or just like thinking about your own metrics, you might discover that an extra hour of work weekly only increases your output by 2%. Probably not worth it. Other times, you'll find that there are activities that follow the Pareto principle, which is also known as the 80-20 rule, where 20% of your efforts produce 80% of your results. Yay, that's a great place to focus your energies. Being able to identify these activities and focus on them is career gold.
So by identifying outputs, selecting appropriate metrics, tracking and improving your performance and reviewing the results, those five steps, you'll develop an understanding of how your work creates value for the organization. And this is one of the most valuable career skills because you make better decisions about where to focus your time and energy for the rest of your career. And that time and energy focus is rewarded with salary and promotions and all the things that we want. And what's more, we'll have evidence. You'll have the evidence you need for performance reviews and interviews that prove your contribution to the organization in the terms and the language that hiring managers and team managers are looking for. So start today. It doesn't matter. What is the saying? The best time to plant a tree was 100 years ago. The second best time was yesterday. Start today. Even if you don't do it perfectly, it doesn't matter because, like I just said, most people aren't doing this. You'll have insights that most people don't develop through any time in their career. So even if you feel like you're in the last 5 years, you can make those the best 5 years by doing this, by starting today.
Thanks, Wendy.
Thanks, Kate. That's all for this week. Join us next week as we cover a new topic. Bye, everyone.